BP could be drilling for more oil in the Gulf of Mexico within just a few months.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Reports are this morning the British oil giant BP could restart drilling in the Gulf as early as July. That would be less than 15 months from the time of the worst oil spill in U.S. history, and one that BP continues to pay billions in cleanup and compensation. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us now to tell us about it. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So is this business as usual for BP?
Well, I should say that a U.S. spokesperson says a decision has not been announced, and BP is refusing to comment. But according to these pretty widespread reports, BP is going to be allowed to drill 10 existing wells in the Gulf. These are not new exploratory wells. But if this story is correct, it's a breakthrough. It shows BP's rehabilitation has begun.
And we know the Obama administration, Stephen, has called for the U.S. to be more energy independent. I mean, is this a part of that story?
Very much so. I mean, everything that's happened in recent weeks, the Middle East, the renewed doubts about nuclear power after Japan, have underlined the importance of the Gulf of Mexico for the U.S. authorities. Here's Nick McGregor, an oil analyst with stockbrokers Redmayne Bentley.
They really need BP and companies like it to continue their activities in the Gulf of Mexico to provide energy for America's future and reduce dependency upon imports.
He says that shutting BP out of the Gulf would be very difficult. It would mean that, or it could mean that BP's fields there might not be developed in the short term. And the U.S. would, for a time at least, lose access to much needed oil, which is on its doorstep.
Mm. All right, Marketplace is Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Well, it is now official. President Obama is running for re-election. But the timing of this morning's web announcement isn't just a coincidence. It's focused on, you guessed it, money. Marketplace's Gregory Warner reports.
By filing papers with the Federal Election Commission today, the president can officially start fundraising for his re-election. That gives him the entire second quarter, April, May, and June, until his campaign has to tell anyone how much money they've raised. They're going for maximum sticker shock. I called up Tony Corrado. He's a campaign finance expert at Colby College in Maine.
But the money that you raise is itself an ad.
That's correct, especially in the year before the election. Fundraising is one of the main metrics that are used to assess a candidate's strength.
President Obama raised $750 million in 2008. Now Corrado and others are talking about this being the first billion-dollar campaign. That means meetings with big-ticket donors and also lots of Facebook and Twitter campaigns to reach out to small donors.
The technology in 2012 is even more powerful than it was, and I expect that they are going to make that again a central focus of their campaign.
Because in the war of campaign war chests, it's not just about how much money you raise, but who's writing the checks. I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Well, markets are higher right now. European stocks mostly up at the moment. Asian markets as well. Minmetals Resources says it wants to make an all-cash offer of $6.5 billion to buy Equinox Minerals. Minmetals is the Hong Kong unit of China's biggest metals trading firm. Wall Street Friday, the Dow added 56 points to close at 12,376. For the week, the Dow was up more than a percent. And for the year, up 7%.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constellation, supporting customer choice and clean, efficient energy sources and technologies, working with customers nationwide to create a sustainable energy future. Constellation.com. By Chevrolet, undertaking a carbon-reducing effort, investing in projects like wind farms and planting trees across America over the next few years. ChevyCarbonReduction.com. And by Microsoft, providing comprehensive business solutions for the cloud. You can learn more at Microsoft.com/cloud.
A new report out today says the nation's largest corporation, General Electric, will indeed pay some taxes for 2010. The New York Times reported more than a week ago GE didn't pay any income taxes on billions of dollars it made last year. But the report out today, produced by ProPublica and Fortune.com, says that's not altogether true. The story is co-authored by Fortune's Alan Sloan, and he's with us now. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
So you found out GE did, in fact, pay taxes. How did the earlier reports get it so wrong?
they confused a number that goes to shareholders with the number that goes to the IRS, and they're different numbers.
So why didn't GE just come out with the PR machine and, you know, at the time say, whoa, that's not right. We really did pay some taxes. This was a mistake.
GE's tax department, which is notoriously secretive and I think not communicative even with the the rest of the company, and the PR department did not quite understand what was going on and were very confused and never got the message out. And as far as I know, still haven't gotten it out. But my partner, Jeff Girth, and I sort of figured this out. And after a whole lot of time, they said, you know, you're right. We really do have an income tax liability for 2010.
Do we have any idea of how much that liability is?
No. The term GE uses is small. And when I said what the small mean, nobody will tell me. And everything is relative. It won't actually be completely settled until GE finishes preparing its tax return for 2010, which is probably going to be a while from now because they got until September to file it.
What's the bottom line here, Alan?
Well, the bottom line is there's a very good story to be written on the operations of GE and its approach to taxes and its tax department because they are notoriously aggressive. They pay as little tax as possible, and there's a serious conversation to be held about that. But let's at least figure out what the problem is instead of shrieking and looking for victims and madmen and examples who are, in fact, not examples.
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
And finally, a New York man had an idea. Buy one of those old Staten Island ferries and convert it into college dorms for students. But docking fees cost way too much. New York wants $1,000 a day to dock in Manhattan. So Jacques Gallet told the Wall Street Journal he needs to sell the boat. No takers yet. His broker thinks he's off his rocker for buying the boat in the first place. Some interested parties are thinking about using the boat as an antique gallery with all the stuff on board for sale, or perhaps for floating wedding receptions. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. On Twitter, at Radio Chio, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
A lot of businesses are converting to clean energy because, you know, it's good for the planet, but it's a pretty sweet deal for them, too.
As the price of traditional power increases, our prices generally stay flat.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Going green to save some green. We'll have the numbers and the day's business news as well next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.